Welcome, everyone. This is our first Hackberry Hollow podcast. I am Glenn Moyes.
I'm Adam Weber.
Yep. So now you are familiar with our voices.
Yes. I'm the annoying sounding one.
Yeah. Okay. So one of the reasons why we're doing this podcast, actually the main reason why we're doing this podcast, is to try something new and to see if we could do it. So we've been, it's been more than a year since we've been posting, like, just, you know, concept art or maybe a few little, you know, articles on the blog. But we figured, why not do a podcast? Because Adam and I actually spend hours upon hours on Skype talking about the story. In fact, we are very familiar with Skype's, which we've been calling the 613 bug, which means that it's a Skype call goes 6 hours and 13 minutes over, we will start to hear an echo. Like, for some reason, the echo cancellation stops working on my end.
And it gets really, really scary when we encounter that bug multiple times in one day, because we've been working on Hackberry Hollow for so many hours.
For over 12 hours.
Yes.
Yeah.
12 and a half hours.
Yeah. So, but anyway, so we figured, you know, let's do a podcast and kind of, you know, talk about, you know, where we're at. One of the things that I feel pretty strongly about, and well, just to kind of back up a little bit, when I was at college and I started teaching Blender workshops, Blender 3D software, I realized that one of the problems that people have with teaching is that they've forgotten how they learned something. And of course, I was doing their art program and graphic design and things like that. And I was reading a bunch of books on, like, you know, how to draw, you know, people, like comic book drawing and things like that. And they, you know, it would say, okay, here's how you're supposed to draw a leg. This is how you're supposed to draw a nose. But they didn't explain how they got to that point of, this is why I've been drawing legs this way. This is why I've been drawing noses this way. This is why my marks on paper work better than your marks on paper. And part of that is because they've just forgotten their learning process, because they've been learning for, you know, like a decade, and you've just forgotten how you got to that point. So it's difficult to communicate with people who are in the middle of learning how you figured out all this stuff. Like, what was the key ingredient to, okay, when did you finally figure out, you know, how to draw the human body from memory? What was the breakthrough? And they just don't remember. Which is why I think the Structure of Man series, I'm just going to go ahead and plug that. That's at alienthink.com. If that series is really successful, because he kind of created his own process of how you learned. So one of the things we've been doing with Hackberry Hollow, and I'm sure all of the projects that we do from now on, is to keep a production journal. Whenever we realize something or some theory ends up working really, really well when applied to our story, we write that down so we can remember all these little breakthroughs that we had. Everything that we learned, a lot of the decisions that we made in the story, we can have recorded so we can remember how we learned how to do this. Because otherwise, we're just going to be like, it was a lot of hard work, and that was the key ingredient.
Yeah, we just kind of put hours and hours and hours into it. The fear is that if people look at our thing, and if we don't record this and or keep track of everything that we did, then when somebody else comes and asks us, well, how did you do this? Well, we just put in hours of work, and we put in over 12-hour days writing. And so then they sit down and try to write their own story and then just sit there and go, what did you do for all that time?
Yeah. Oh, we can tell them what we did for a lot of that time.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see, what is it like? Well, this isn't the way anymore, because we've actually buckled down and stopped this. But previously, I think a third of our time was tangents.
Yeah. my theory is that, you know, tangents kind of follow a curve, but a secant goes wherever it wants.
Yeah.
And so we've had quite a number of secants.
Yeah. And a lot of times those are necessary, because when you, especially with Hackberry Hollow, where we are creating this whole world, And we need to make, it needs to be believable. So we just start talking about just all kinds of crazy stuff.
All kinds of things that apply to the world. One of the things that I've really been into, I've been writing stories since I was a really little kid. And over the years, I've been developing a very large mass of theories on what it actually takes to make a good story. And one thing that I was really happy about with Glenn was that he had his own list of theories, and a lot of them matched mine. And so one of the things that was a major goal for Hackberry Hollow was we wanted to apply these theories and see if they actually work. Hey, let's see if we can actually do this, actually make a story that follows these. And then if we can even pull it off, will people actually like it? Are the theories correct? You know, Glenn was teasing earlier about how they're actually hypotheses and we're kind of we're just guessing. And, you know, one of the big theories, the one that I kind of started on, is I call it my Bible that I actually read, is that you can't please everyone. If you're going to make a story, you can't write one that everyone's going to enjoy. And remember, like, Hollywood tends to hold to the fact that you need to have as wide of an audience as possible. In fact, the book Save the Cat is a very popular screenwriting book, and that's a big theme in there, is as wide of an audience as possible. Your story has to have a love interest. It has to have, you know, this. And from my perspective, I've noticed that there are a lot of stories out there that just focus on a very specific audience, and the people that enjoy those stories just absolutely go nuts over them. And so from what one of the things that that we're starting on, our foundation, is make our audience as happy as possible. And so then from there, what are things that we want to see in a story? So this story is lengthy, it's episodic content. And so we felt like one of the big things that we would really like to see is a story written completely in advance. No retcon whatsoever, retroactive continuity. And that has saved our bacon so many times, it's not even funny.
It is not even funny how much it saved our bacon. Oh my goodness. Didn't we go back and completely rewrite chapter one, like, twice?
Yeah. Yeah, we redid chapter one multiple times. I remember, like, we were doing, what was it, chapter 12, and then going back and adding things to chapters 2 and 3. Yeah. That it's like, oh, crap, we forgot to mention this. And, oh, man, the audience is going to get confused when they reach this line. You know, it's all the perspective of the audience. What is the audience going to experience? And we've already, like, as far as we are right now, I think that theory is very sound. Because I could just imagine if we had to retcon all those things, it would be very hard to convince people, oh, yeah, we really did plan from the beginning, but we didn't do a good job. That also gives us time to have a test audience read over our chapters. Like, as of this recording, we have 16 chapters written, at least current drafts of those chapters. All of them are subject to change at this point, and they'll probably continue to have tweaks done to them up until we actually produce the real comic.
Yeah, but so far, it doesn't seem like a whole lot of tweaks have actually needed to be made. And actually, fairly recently, we just barely finished volume one, and that took a lot of time to go through, because as we were writing the script, we realized how much stuff, and we'll get into process later, but how much stuff in our outline actually wasn't working.
Yeah.
So we spent, like, I think, like, 2 weeks straight just working out the plot holes and...
Yeah, without any script writing at all. We were just going around on the outline.
Yeah, and now we're back to it, and we've been doing, like, let's see, last week we did 3 chapters. I think this week we might do 3 chapters, but definitely 2.5.
Yeah, I think 2.5 is more likely. Then, of course, there is a suspension of disbelief. And I've actually gotten a little bit of flack over this one, because our story features a taxidermist. And And I've been going around and talking to taxidermists and trying to figure out, okay, how exactly do you do this? And one thing that I was kind of surprised by some people who are into taxidermy and finding out, you know, it's like you're trying to learn about taxidermy, but you have no intention of being a taxidermist, and they are kind of hostile to the idea. But I think a few people kind of warmed up to it after I explained this. If you have a story, especially one with ours that has things in that are pretend, like magic, for example, anything in there that does exist in real life, anything that's real, has to be as real as possible so that you can have confidence in the things that are made up. So that has to do with everything from, you know, how government works, how all the technologies that exist in their work, how is taxidermy done, what else? We've done research into factories, into robotics.
Cargo shipping and...
Oh, cargo shipping.
Oh, man. That was fascinating, actually.
Everything down to the ID identification numbers on the cargo ship containers. The amount of detail that we've got in everything is quite extensive. But to do that, I mean, most of the audience probably won't even notice that kind of detail. I mean, who's going to look at the cargo ship containers and say, oh, that number's not formatted right? But the point is that when it is that detailed and it has that that level of realism, then when you get to things like the magic, all of a sudden you can have a suspension of disbelief. If you have to suspend disbelief on too many things, especially on things that do exist in real life, you go out to the real world and see, this is different from the way it is in, say, Hackberry Hollow, all of a sudden, a lot of the tension is lost. And then, of course, that brings me back to magic itself. When you have a magic system, and I would expand that to say sci-fi technology counts as a magic system. It's the same thing. You have to be extremely consistent. And what the magic can't do is almost more important than what it can. So that means that you can't suddenly pull random magic spells out of a hat whenever your character gets in a pickle. Here, let's use this never-before-mentioned spell that would have been really useful in the last chapter. As soon as you do that, that's another thing that tension is gone, because you know that a character can just all of a sudden use a spell that, you know, the author has never seen fit to tell you about, probably because they haven't thought of it yet. And so they get into a situation, and you know they might not get back out. And then the characters themselves. Every single character has a history. They have a background. They're the sum of all their experiences. They had an upbringing. All of their thoughts and actions are dictated by these things. And in the whole story, nothing is forgotten. Everything that happens in the story happens for a reason. It can be referred back to. Most things are referred back to. And even the things that aren't referred back to did somehow advance the story, advance your understanding of what's going on, advance the characters or develop the characters. So nothing happens in there that doesn't serve it somehow. And these are all things that I think they really go back to the whole writing the story in advance, because without doing that, I'm not talented enough to do all this.
Well, there just would have been no way.
There would
have been no way. Even you know, an outline is kind of nice, but and I guess we can start going to a process now.
Yeah.
Because there are some comic books that, or online comics that, you know, they'll say, oh, this is all written in advance, but all they really have is an outline. And then when they go to layout and script, and then it's like, oh, yeah.
And you see retcon all over the place.
Right.
And it's like, oh, crap, I forgot to mention this, or... Oh man, I was supposed to introduce this character two chapters back, and now the part that I invented the character for is here, and I forgot to introduce the character. And we have that same problem. We're human, but for us, we can just go back and add it in there, and nobody will ever know that it was ever missing, other than the fact that we're talking about it here in a podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and also that's one of the nice things about having a production journal. And also we have a wiki that we put all of our stuff up on, when we use Gobby. So basically we have, let's see, we have our meeting notes saved. We have a history of the script saved in either on the wiki or on the Gobby sessions that Adam's been very good about keeping incremental backups of, because that's not something we want to lose.
Yeah, I increment every single day.
Of course, I have backups on my end. But
the date of the save is part of the file name, so I think I have how many hundreds of Gobby files.
Yeah, and I think what will be fun is to later, when the story comes out, show some of the earlier versions of the script so people can laugh at them.
Yeah, like how bad it was.
Because of how bad it was, yeah.
That's another thing is that, I mean, really, this is a learning experience for us. And I've been making stories for forever, but I've never made anything like this. I've never done one collaboratively. And the thing of it is, I've always been a believer that the way that I can know if an idea is good or not is if I can bounce it off of somebody else and engage the reaction. If they like the idea, okay, this has potential. If they're indifferent or they're like, eh, then I'll throw it out. But the problem is that I've been doing this with just generic people. I've been throwing ideas out, but a lot of people I found are very polite about, they don't want to make you feel bad. They'll tell you it's good, whether it's good or not. The nice thing about working with another writer, another person who understands story, who knows what they're doing, is that person can filter out my crappy ideas and won't be shy about if an idea is crappy. And I can do the same back. So I don't know who did what percentage of the story, and it doesn't really matter. The point is that it's better than anything either of us have ever done.
Yeah, by a long shot. I mean,
by a huge margin.
Yeah, because both Adam and I, we were working on our own little projects kind of on the side. And then we started working on this. It was holy. I mean, I think there's been a few times where we just leaned back in our chairs and were like,
and just laughed.
We're like, we wrote this.
Yeah. We had one of those moments after we finished chapter 14. We just sat there and stared at it and we're just like, dude. I'm happy.
Yeah, that's a really emotional chapter. Keep an eye out for it.
yeah, that one's. Now I should qualify that by saying that everything is still subject to change, but as of this recording, that's chapter 14. And then we've been fighting each other back and forth on anachronisms. There was one that I really liked and wanted to put in, which ironically Glenn came up with.
Yeah, there's a chapter name that. Man, yeah, see, this is going to be so hard. We're trying to talk about stuff, but we can't spoil the story at all.
Maybe we'll just bleep it out.
No, this is fun. We can... Yeah, we'll bleep it out. That's like the same as not saying anything.
Yeah, kind of like that Penn and Teller thing where they asked Teller... It was on a radio program. They asked Teller to say something for them, and so he dropped the F-bomb, so they had to bleep it out.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
That's funny.
That was great. But we're constantly learning new things as we go. I mean, it's getting a feel for what kind of ideas work and what kind doesn't. And the other thing is that I'm sure we'll go through a lot of this again on our next story. We actually have a couple of ideas in the idea bin for what our next story might be. It'll be very different from this one.
Yes, very, very
and
different.
It'll be very interesting for me anyway to see which theories can apply to that one and which ones really don't as much. Because I think that a lot of things do depend on what the story actually is. You know, in this case, we're a fantasy. We have a magic system. Who knows if our next one will? Maybe not. This one has animal characters, which has its own set of rules. I won't never say never because I know better than that. But it's not likely that our next one will. So a lot of the rules that we have to follow that to handle animal characters, a lot of things we can put in and can't. Very careful about using words like human or suggest human.
Mm-hmm. Or what's up, man? Or
what's up, man? Well, I don't know. We could almost get away with that one. Can't use the phrase only human.
Right.
A lot of these things really may not apply in our next story, but that's the thing is that that'll be a whole new learning experience. And a lot of this stuff will apply. And I'd like to think that every our best story will always be our most recent one.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm always down with outdoing ourselves.
Yeah, I think that we're the ones that we're in competition with is ourselves. You know, there's a lot of stories out there that just blow me away, and I'm like, dude, we got to totally beat this. But
Mistborn.
Mistborn.
Yeah, go read that if you haven't. Which I haven't read it. Adam has. He can rant and rave about that one all he wants.
Well, yeah. Mistborn wasn't perfect. It doesn't really draw you in the first book. It's just the second book is where you start to get drawn in, and the third one I just went nuts. Yeah. So if you have time to read a book, a book series, it's only three books long. Mistborn, I highly recommend, and that one really set the bar for me. Mm-hmm. and Glenn will attest to this. I'm constantly comparing us to that.
Yeah. Wait, didn't we just say that we're only in competition with ourselves?
Yeah, I did say that, didn't I?
Yeah, but you know what? Looking at what other people are doing and say we have to do something that is as awesome as that's good. You know, that we can.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and you know, we'll be constantly looking back at this and thinking what could we have done better. Hopefully, we'll get faster at it. I would like to. You know, we've been working on this for how many years now? I mean, we've been blogging about it for 1 year, but we had been working on it for at least a year by then.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I can pull up my my production journal and tell you. See, and that's what's nice about having a production journal is...
Speaking of production journal...
Yeah, we have dates for all this stuff. Like when we started working, I think I even have the point down when we decided, you know what? Maybe this shouldn't be this really wacky story. Maybe it should be a little more serious. You know.
Oh yeah, there's a little bit of background on this. Hackberry Hollow was originally going to be a really silly comedy, where we wanted to have a laugh in every release, and there's still some humor in there. There's actually quite a bit of humor in there, but the humor is a lot more natural now. There's a few artifacts left over from the silliness, but not very many.
Yeah, and when we do catch it, you know, it's like, oh, that's this thing. Yeah, this doesn't work anymore. Chuck it.
Yeah. I mean, there wasn't tension in there at all originally. It was just meant for you to just read it and belly laugh the whole time. But then what it morphed into instead? I mean, say I'm not much of a comedy writer, and I know Glenn is. He's pretty good with comedy. I tend to write tension. That's what all my stuff is. My past stories were all tension. Then of course I later learned about the highlighter principle. And term I coined myself. There's probably an industry term for it. Someday I'll learn what that is. Mm-hmm. But that's based on the theory that if you take a highlighter and you highlight every single line in a document, then you've really highlighted nothing because everything is the same now. The way to use a highlighter correctly is you only highlight the most important lines, or on a computer equivalent would be using bold. The way you apply that to a story is at least as far as tension and many other things as well. Tension is just one example. But you want to, if you want to have something feel intense, you have it follow up something that was slow. And you never want to have just constant tension. Battlestar Galactica I actually found quite boring because they had so much tension in every scene. If there wasn't enough tension, they bring in the woman in the red dress. And it got boring. You got to the climax of the episode, and by that point the tension had subsided. You're relaxed, and it's not any more than what you had before. So what we're doing is we'll have a chapter where there's a lot of dialogue. It's slower. There's not much happening, and then all of a sudden all hell breaks loose. So you'll go for a while. You'll be relaxed. You know, the heart rate's down. You're not expecting much. You let your guard down, and then all of a sudden we get this super intense scene. And following that same scene up after something that had a lot of tension in it, you might not have, you know, gone nuts over it. But then if you follow up a slower chapter with a chapter that's really intense and high adrenaline, then all of a sudden it feels like it's double what it really is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and of course there's also the issue of making sure that whatever slow chapter or even like an intense chapter you put in there serves the story.
Yes.
I'm trying to remember how did we manage to pull that off? I'm trying to remember.
Well, there's a little bit of exhibition, but another trick is with a slow chapter is if the chapter has to be slow, I want to make it interesting. So you have this chapter where, you know, there's not much tension. The bad guys nowhere to be seen, etc. But in that you're just riveted. You're glued to this thing because it's so fascinating. Or you'll have a character moment. Or sometimes we'll have a comedy in such a chapter. We'll have something funny happen. Like, for example, let's bleep something out.
Okay.
Yeah, see that, Glenn? Now you have to edit this audio.
Ah, great. Post-production work. Woohoo.
Yay, post-production.
Yeah, so it's, yeah, so that beep as an example. But I think kind of what we did, and I think, yeah, we can start going to process now. The way we've been doing this is, and actually, and just one other thing I want to say, as far as how we've gotten to this point, is we didn't just come up with a lot of these theories on our own. We actually read a lot. We've read a lot of books on story writing and plot and structure and character and viewpoint, which is the Orson Scott Card book.
I've actually mentioned Save the Cat. I've read a lot of books on writing. A lot of them have to do with screenplay, and others have to do with novels. But anything that has to do with, you know, and then there's one on narrative illustration comics. But anything that has to do with story, anything that'll help me improve mine, reading other people's theories, their discoveries, I want to read it. You know, there's a great blog called Story Fanatic that has a lot of really good stuff on it. And, you know, I don't necessarily agree with everything that I read in all those sources, but it's nice to see that this is a theory that this person has. And especially on a lot of these books, at least, I can point to other stuff that author has written, see their theories in action, and see how well they're working, at least from my perspective. And the other thing with storytelling is that it's so subjective. You know, one thing that one person may really, really like, another person may not like so much. And so that's another thing that I've kind of decided is, who am I going to try and please? Back to my theory from earlier, you decide who you want to please and make them as happy as possible. I feel like the audience that I have to target is the audience that I'm in.
Me.
Because I know
us.
What I...
Yeah.
Us. We're part of the same demographic, and that works fairly well because we know exactly what we like. Oh, dude, this is awesome. And then, of course, you always have a bias. Like, if you wrote something, then you may not see its flaws. I remember going through the art program in college, and I would be drawing this figure drawing, for example, and I'd be like, oh, man, this is turning out really good. This looks great. And then the instructor would come by, look at it, take one look, and take a piece of tracing paper, stick on top of it, and correct it. And he would have this ridiculous number of changes. And then I would go down there. I'd sit down, look at my drawing, look at the model, look at the tracing paper, look at the model, and then just go,
oh.
So no matter how good it looks to us, and that's why we have a test audience, we're having other people read it and give us opinions and feedback. And we've even been posting a lot of questions to these guys. And most of them don't know anything about the story in advance. Some do. My brother's part of the test audience, and he knows the whole story and is reading our execution and critiquing it. And he does have a fairly good understanding of stories. Then other people may or may not. Some do, some don't. But even if they don't have an understanding of story, their feedback is still immensely useful because I can see, you know, the subjective part. Do you like this? Is something not working? Is something not clear? Did we mess up in describing something so you have no clue what we're talking about. If you don't know what we're talking about, we need to go back and fix it. That's why we're writing it in advance. So hopefully that'll give us a level of defense against the I wrote this bias.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a term for that, too. Maybe I'll learn that someday.
It's probably on TV Tropes or something.
I'll bet it's on TV Tropes. Yeah, everything's on TV Tropes. Yeah. I spend so many hours on that wiki.
Yeah, see, there is another resource we've used.
I need to give you a word of warning. If you're a writer and you go on TV Tropes, as soon as you open that up in your browser, expect to drain the next 4 hours. Because you'll end up clicking links in every article, and then it just expands out exponentially. And how long you spend on that website is directly proportional to how much memory your computer has, which will dictate how many tabs you can have open.
Yeah, imagine you know, it's kind of like what happens when you're browsing Wikipedia, but imagine if Wikipedia was only filled with stuff you were interested in. Yeah.
And they had more sane guidelines about what can go in.
Yeah.
I'm sure that every single scene someone could go through and find references on TV Tropes to every mechanic we've used. But really, I mean, there's really nothing new anymore. Writing has been around for so long, and for us, it's just a matter of using them in the best way possible.
Yep.
That's kind of lead into this. Our process has kind of been, you know, brainstorm, throw together an outline, redo the outline, brainstorm some more, redo the outline, do some more brainstorming, redo the outline.
Yeah, over and over again. It's an iterative process.
Yeah, over and over and over again. It's like it's recursive. You know, if you're into programming, you just loop over and over again. Then somehow you break the loop and then start writing the script. Then you realize the outline is stupid and rinse and repeat.
Yeah. And one thing about the outline, though, basically what that is it's just a sequence of events of what happens in the story. And a lot of times it'll just be random notes. And one thing we've learned about outlines is that an outline is only notes for you. If you try to have someone read your outline, they're not going to understand it. And we actually learned that with Shane.
Yeah, Shane tried to read our outline, and he could not make heads or tails of it.
Yeah, and then we're like, okay, maybe,
See, right. For us, we were both part of the discussions. We wrote this thing, and whenever we put down notes, we both knew exactly what we were thinking when those notes went down. And so they were just notes to remind us of what our thought process was. And even now, I could look at anything in the outline and know exactly what we had in mind. But somebody who wasn't there, which is pretty much the other 7 billion people in the world, aren't going to be able to make heads or tails of the thing.
Yeah. So having an outline isn't going to be good enough for a test audience. I think that was one of the big lessons that we learned, which also explains why, because in the entertainment industry, there's kind of, there's two camps. One camp says that, you know, you want to do scripts, and then the other camp says, don't bother with scripts, go straight to storyboards. And for us, we were, let's totally do a script, because we're still trying to get, you know, our drawing skills down. If we tried to storyboard this whole thing, it would have taken way too long for us. And when I thought about it, I was like, you know, actually, because you have a storyboarding team. You have tons of people who are storyboarding this movie. And when you need to get feedback, you just show people the storyboards. They can read it instantly. And there's your instant feedback. So like, you know, with an outline, we can't do that. And it, even scripts are a little bit trickier to read because it's basically a list of instructions on how our layouts are going to kind of work when we get to that point.
Yeah, layouts, dialogue. And there may even be some minor adjustments going from script to final comic.
Yeah.
You know, when we do our layout pass and figure out exactly how all the panels are going to...
Poses and acting for the characters.
even as it is with the script, on members of the test audience, I've had to go through and tell them, okay, this isn't mentioned in the script, but here's what animal each one of the characters are. You'll get that for free in the comics. You'll just be able to look at them.
Yeah.
Here's what things look like. Here, you know, one of the things that that we're doing with the comic is if we want, we're doing really fine-tuned control of the pacing. If we want you to go through a section really fast, then we have no dialogue or very little dialogue. If we want you to slow down, we'll have a lot of dialogue. But when you're reading the script, that doesn't happen. The opposite happens. When you're reading dialogue, you tend to go through it faster. But then when you're when you have just what in the comic is going to be panels, in the script it's description.
Yeah.
And so then you have then you just hit the brakes, and then you have to read through all that description to get what's going on. So the pacing as far as how fast you go through it is actually the opposite in the script of what's going to be in the comic, which has been a challenge for us as well.
Yeah, when we were writing chapter 10, which actually took us quite a lot of time, because yeah, there was hardly any dialogue in there. I mean, there was some shouting, but you know.
Yeah. But it's supposed to be very, very fast paced. Most people that read through that, because it's just going to be images, they're going to be scrolling through that quite rapidly, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
So, but when you read the script, I mean, it take you like half hour to read through that chapter, I would imagine. Whereas with the actual comic, you'll fly through that one in about 5 minutes.
Yeah. So.
You know, chapter 9, it doesn't take that long to read through it. You probably take about half the time to read through it. But then when you're going through the comic, it probably take longer, because when you're reading dialogue in a comic, you look at the image, then look at the dialogue, and then move on to the next panel.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Dialogue actually is slower paced in a comic than it is even in a novel. Because in a novel, you're just going through at a constant pace.
And then as far as, you know, when we actually get our script treatment done, then we can get people to read it and get some really valuable feedback from that. So,
yes.
So that's, yeah. So for this, definitely getting the script done as soon as possible so people can read it is, well, and that actually right now, that's our goal. We have a 2-chapter quota per week. And if we keep this up, we should be able to have the entire script. I mean, this is a big deal. I mean, how many pages of script do we think that would be?
Hundreds. It's gotta be almost 1,000 pages of script.
Yeah.
Easily.
So, cause I think I printed out like the first 6 chapters and ended up being 50 pages or something like that. So, and of course, script is different than actual comic.
Yeah, because there's a lot of description in script. So,
yeah,
but there are 52 chapters, and we're trying to get 2 done a week minimum. My kind of unwritten goal has been 3, and we did manage to get 3 last week. I don't think we will this week, but whatever it ends up being, if we can get 2 chapters a week, we can have the whole script done by the end of the year. We want to have the whole thing read by our test audience with feedback that we can go in, make sure everything that is clear that was supposed to be clear, everything's working, and hopefully they like it. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, that's going to be the biggest thing. So
that's the part that I'm nervous about, and I hope that they would be honest. Like, those of you who are in the test audience and listening to this podcast, be honest.
We really do not want to have the last few years of our life be a complete waste.
Yes.
No pressure.
Be honest. If it sucks, tell us so that we can fix it.
Because we're probably going to be drawing this thing over the next few years as well.
Yes.
So, yeah.
So for our sake, please be honest. I will not be offended if you think it sucks. I will probably ask you why. And you don't even have to know why. I just have to know. I like it if you know why, because that'll help me fix it. But, you know, just be honest.
Yeah. So that's pretty much where we're at right now. And And again, the reason why we're doing this podcast and probably future podcasts, although I don't think we're going to be turning this into a regular thing.
Probably not. We might do some more. I mean, there's a comment system on the blog. I mean, you can give us feedback there if you want. Let us know if you want to see more of these.
Yeah, you can listen to our voices while you jog or work or play StarCraft 2 or something. I don't know. All right. So I think that just about wraps it up. And again, I am Glenn. If you didn't remember my voice.
I'm Adam.
And we'll probably be able to get some of the other people in on this too. So now that we got the Skype recording thing working, so that's pretty neat. So, all right. So here we are, Hackberry Hollow Writing Team, signing off.